Good afternoon. I'm Yvonne Crumry. You're listening to KTOO. Thank you for tuning in. The City and Borough of Juneau has finalized a budget for the next fiscal year, but it didn't come easy. Over the past few months, the Juneau Assembly spent dozens of hours debating how to plug a multi-million dollar recurring budget hole due to the tax exemption on food and utilities and the cap on the city's property tax rate the voters passed last fall. Those ballot initiatives created a roughly $10 to $12 million annual revenue shortfall going forward for the city. KTOO's Clarice Larson has been following along in the city budget process and has these three main takeaways.
Takeaway number one, the final budget closes one city facility and reduces funding to some services, but certainly not as much as originally expected. The talk of this budget season was whether the Assembly would choose to make significant cuts to city services or close some facilities. Ultimately, the budget the Assembly approved on Monday night keeps open Juneau's two pools, Diamond Park Fieldhouse, the Douglas Fire Station, and maintains social service grants. All were on the list of more than 40 city services and facilities up for potential cuts. The Assembly took those topics off the chopping block after receiving a flood of public outcry. The budget does, however, reduce funding to the Juneau Douglas City Museum by $261,000 annually, which will result in two staff members being laid off, and a drastic reduction in the museum's hours. That decision came despite more than a dozen people who testified in support of fully funding the museum. Mary Pat Wyatt says the loss of staff members would be devastating.
The museum without a director is like trying to lead an orchestra without a conductor, or running a school without a principal, or a town without a mayor. I ask that all current staff positions at the Juneau Douglas City Museum be retained, fully funded, to keep our heritage and history alive.
Assemblymember Maureen Hall and Paul Kelly attempted to restore the funding to the budget in the final hour, but their efforts were voted down. Along with the reduction to the museum, the budget also includes the closure and sale of Mount Jumbo Gym and a reduction in funding to Travel Juneau, the city's landscaping budget, the Juneau Economic Development Council, and the Jensen Olsom Arboretum. The budget also eliminates an administrative support position in the city's administration department. And now for takeaway number two. The Assembly approved some changes to taxation that are expected to increase city revenue, but by how much is unclear. The Assembly voted to raise the city's sales tax cap on single-item goods from $15,000 to $50,000, with a caveat for vehicles purchased under $50,000. That caveat is that if you buy a vehicle for under $50,000, you would only pay sales tax for up to $15,000. So that basically means you'd pay about $750 in sales tax instead of $2,500 in sales tax. The Assembly considered removing the tax cap entirely, which would have brought in close to $7 million in estimated revenue next fiscal year. However, representatives from Core Alaska Kensington Mine and Juneau Auto Mall testified against that, arguing it would disproportionately impact large industrial operations and people purchasing vehicles in Juneau. This is Steve Ball, the general manager for Kensington Mine.
Removing the cap would increase Kensington's annual tax burden by approximately $5 million, roughly tripling the sales tax we pay today, a significant and ongoing increase that would directly affect operational decisions and long-term investment.
The Assembly ultimately voted against completely removing the tax cap. According to City Finance Director Angie Flick, it's unclear how much the change to raise the tax cap will impact the city's revenue for the next fiscal year. And that leads to takeaway number three. The city is not out of the woods yet with its budget problems. The budget the Assembly approved relies heavily on savings and shuffling money from other city funding pots, rather than cutting services or increasing revenue to get out of the red. Assemblymember Christine Wall says that's a problem.
We have not cut enough, and it puts us, the city, in a very precarious place now, given our fund balance size.
Without any major cuts or revenue increases this year, Wall and other Assembly members cast serious concerns about the next fiscal year. If spending stays the same, the Assembly is anticipated to face another $7 million revenue deficit that will need to be addressed. And that time around, they won't likely have as much in the piggy bank to fall back on.
Our fund balance right now is one bad sales tax quarter away from having no funds to deal with our operating our expenses, let alone a major natural disaster or other disaster.
The fiscal year begins on July 1st. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And every 2 years, Indigenous people from across Southeast Alaska and around the world gather in Juneau for celebration. This year, as campaign season heats up, the multi-day cultural and dance festival counted some political candidates among its attendees. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone sat down with a few and has this report.
Celebration is not your typical summer campaign event. No booths with campaign signs, not a ton of politicking, but it still drew its share of candidates this year. Former State Senator Click Bishop, now a candidate for governor, says he's been coming to Celebration for nearly two decades.
It's living history. They haven't lost their culture. And you can see it generation upon generation.
Bishop has spent much of his career in state government, much of it right here in Juneau, 6 years as the state's labor commissioner and 12 years as a state senator representing an immense swath of interior Alaska. In a few ways, Bishop defies pigeonholing. He's running as a Republican. He says he's been with the GOP since he first registered to vote in Manly Hot Springs in 1974. But Bishop says his party doesn't define him.
I'm an Alaskan first and a Republican second. I've always been that way. I launched my first campaign that way. I couldn't carry the late Senator Ted Stevens' lunchbox, but I align myself with his philosophy. To hell with politics, just do what's right for Alaska.
That sentiment is evident in some of his policy positions. He boasts deep support from organized labor groups, typically a Democratic constituency, and says he's a big fan of the Alaska Marine Highway System. Bishop also says he's a fiscal conservative who would like to expand drilling, mining, and oil refining in an effort to drive down prices and expand green energy, like hydroelectricity. Bishop even picked a registered nonpartisan, Nana Regional Corporation board member Greta Shirk, as his running mate. She's an Upiak woman who ran for state house as a Democrat in 2012. But is he here at Celebration to court the native vote? Bishop says he won't be pigeonholed there either.
I don't pander for anybody's vote.
Another candidate for governor, former Democratic State Senator Tom Begich, also says he didn't come to Celebration to campaign, but he's a little more willing to talk about his explicit outreach to the Indigenous community alongside running mate Julia Nilica.
Both myself and Julia have experienced, you know, a lot of interaction with our Alaska Native community over our careers. So being here is like coming home. And for us, when you come home, you don't grandstand, you listen.
Of course, there's at least a little campaigning, chatting with voters about his top issues like boosting education funding, cutting tax credits for oil companies, and, like Bishop, lowering energy prices.
I'm talking about moving towards affordable energy, renewable energy, and finding ways to do that, so that we can make Alaska affordable again, from the village level all the way to the urban level. And more importantly, a fiscal plan to pay for it.
Begich and Bishop are just two of the 18 candidates seeking one of the four spots on the November ballot for governor. For U.S. House candidate Bill Hill, a commercial fisherman running as an independent, the stakes are a little different. Hill is proud of his Athabascan heritage. Hill says it's his first time at Celebration. Usually this time of year, he says he's getting ready for commercial fishing season in the Bristol Bay community of Naknek. And like Begich and Bishop, he's also talking about high energy prices.
Our spring fuel barge showed up, and immediately the gas prices jumped up to over $9 a gallon. And, you know, that seems like a lot, but if you look at a little further out into different places in Bush, Alaska, it's even more.
It's a crowded field of challengers for Republican Congressman Nick Begich III, and Hill, running as an independent, says he's hoping to consolidate the anti-incumbent vote in a field that also includes well-funded Democrat Matt Schultz.
We are the campaign that can have that can represent very well the coastal fishing communities, the Alaska Native communities, and the Alaska Native organizations. So we can build the coalition that can defeat the incumbent, and that's where our campaign is focused.
Whether those efforts will pay off remains to be seen. Alaskans head to the primary August 18th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And what would you like to ask the primary election candidates for governor, Congress, and more? Share your thoughts with us at alaskapublic.org/2026survey. And former Governor Bill Walker would like to end the permanent fund dividend with a one-time $10,000 payment to each eligible Alaskan. Walker unveiled the plan days after launching his campaign to return to the state's highest elected office, running again as an independent.
We put it out there because, you know, we are in this to solve significant issues. And so, you know, business as usual just isn't going to work. And so we're going to be pretty bold in some of the stuff that we come out with. This is only one of the things we're looking at, obviously.
Walker says his plan would help the state's longstanding structural budget deficit by freeing up about $1 billion beginning in 2028. Lawmakers haven't followed the statutory formula for the dividend since 2016. That's when Walker vetoed half of it during its first term as the state faced a budget crunch. Since then, lawmakers have spent much of their energy each year on determining the amount of the dividend. Walker's running mate and former revenue commissioner, Randy Hoffbeck, calls the annual dividend discussion the, quote, 600-pound gorilla in the room.
We have kind of two choices. We can, you know, cage the gorilla with a new formula, that better reflects our current economic situations and our fiscal situation, or we can actually remove the gorilla from the room.
Walker says he'd assess how Alaskans feel about the plan with a question on the 2027 permanent fund dividend application. And if they agree, Walker said he'd take the idea to the legislature. The state of Alaska has opened an investigation into whether Dan Sullivan of Petersburg is intentionally running for U.S. Senate to confuse voters. He has the same name and party affiliation as Alaska's junior senator, who's up for re-election this year. Since Petersburg Sullivan announced his candidacy, Senator Dan Sullivan and Republican allies have alleged the challenger is running dishonestly. They've claimed he's colluding with the Democratic Party to help Democratic candidate Mary Peltola. Here's Senator Sullivan speaking with CNN.
Of course, people have the right to run for office, but, and this is well-researched, the case law says you don't have the right to run for office if your primary intent is to confuse the voters and rig the election in favor of someone else. And that's exactly what this guy's doing. With the support of the Democrats and a Peltola campaign supporter.
Last week, the National Republican Senatorial Committee sent a letter to the state asking that Petersburg Sullivan be removed from the ballot. In a letter to Petersburg Sullivan yesterday, Republican Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom alleged the state received, quote, credible allegations that he did not file in good faith. Dahlstrom has requested that he answer, under penalty of perjury, 7 questions about his name, his history with the Republican Party, and any interactions he's had with the Democratic Party. Mary Peltola's campaign and the Alaska Democratic Party have publicly denied any affiliation with Petersburg Sullivan, and he has denied colluding with them. Dahlstrom has also asked if Petersburg Sullivan would object to his Republican Party designation being removed from the ballot and have the words non-incumbent being next to his name. Petersburg Sullivan declined an interview last night, but in a letter to the state last week, he asserted he had done nothing wrong by running for Senate. He says he's running because of his dissatisfaction with Senator Sullivan and wrote, quote, the fact that Senator Sullivan shares my first and last name adds insult to injury, motivating me to raise my hand as an alternative choice for Alaskans. He wrote that Republicans have no right to exclude him from the ballot due to his name. Dahlstrom has given Petersburg Sullivan until Wednesday to respond. This is KTOO.